Welcome to the Soul Mama Podcast, where we have deep and honest conversations about healing, awakening, spirituality, and wellness on this sacred journey of conscious motherhood. We ask how we can walk this path in a way that nourishes, elevates, and heals us and our children. We deserve space and time to slow down and tune in to our hearts, to heal ourselves, and to honor our highest callings. It starts with us. I'm Nahanda Truscott-Reed. I'm a mother, holistic wellness coach, writer, and speaker, and I am passionate about all of the ways we can raise our consciousness and come into more alignment and power as women and mothers, so we can heal the past and make more empowered choices for the future. Our stories and voices matter. It is my intention that these conversations inspire, motivate, and move you on your own Soul Mama journey. I'm so honored that you're here. Hey, Mama. How are you? I hope you are well and everything is flowing good in life for you at the moment. So today's conversation is an interesting one. Have you heard of FAM? So it's known as the Fertility Awareness Method, and it's a way of working with our cycles to either bring in a pregnancy to conceive or to use it to prevent pregnancy. So it can be used as a natural contraception as well as a natural conception tool. And I had heard about it. I had heard about this FAM, but wasn't really sure quite how it worked. I thought I might be doing that when I actually conceived my children. But it turns out that there's a lot more that goes into this method. And the reason why it's so important for us to understand how it can be used as an option that doesn't rely on contraceptions such as the pill, the coil, and the injection is because there are lots of side effects and residual impacts that we can have from these methods over time. So I wanted to bring someone onto the podcast who could really speak to our choices and to actually give us some information on how we can really empower ourselves as women and as mothers to take that control over our contraception and when we do choose to conceive. So I found Amanda Bowman, who's going to be our guest today, at a women's yoga therapy training. And she was really passionate about her journey and how she came from understanding this from a personal experience to being a practitioner that actually supports women through understanding their cycles and their body's wisdom. So Amanda Bowman is a certified fertility awareness educator. She provides one-to-one coaching to women wanting to come off hormonal birth control and to women wanting to minimize their chances. For women wanting to maximize their chances of conceiving naturally. Amanda also runs a weekly in-person womb wellness yoga class in Crystal Palace, as well as nourishing postnatal womb yoga circles that provide restful and supportive community for mums. She's also a mother herself to a two-year-old girl, and really helps us to unpack how this method can work for us, what the benefits are, what the drawbacks may be, how to know if it's right for you, when to use it, how to use it. And she's also gifted us a really beautiful guide that I will include a link to in the show notes. So stay tuned. Any questions, any thoughts that come up for you, make a note and hit me up in the DMs or social media at soulmamajourney.com. But for now, enjoy this conversation with Amanda. Welcome, Amanda, to the Soul Mama podcast. It's such a pleasure to have you here. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me, Nahanda. I'm doing really well. Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
So when I was conceiving all of the ideas that I wanted to explore for women and for mothers listening this season, one of the things that came through was really understanding the power of our cycles and understanding how we can really come into sovereignty around that. And I was thinking about who I could bring on to deep dive into this topic, and you came up because we did some training together, and I know that this is a passion of yours. So could you just explain what you do and what brought you to this work?
I could talk about menstrual cycles until the cows come home. So I'm really excited to be chatting about it today. So I am, I'm a mum. I have a two-year-old daughter. I'm also a fertility coach, and I predominantly support women pre and post-pregnancy. So I do this through womb yoga, which is the training that we did together a couple of years ago now, and fertility awareness education. So that's sort of empowering women to understand how their cycle works so that they can use that information to make decisions about how they manage that, whether for natural contraception or in order to conceive. And I kind of came to this through my own experiences. So I had been on the pill, like a lot of women. I was put on the pill quite young to regulate irregular periods. And I put that in inverted commas because it doesn't actually do that, but they don't tell you that when they give it to you. And then I had a lot of troubles with my mental health whilst I was on the pill. And it wasn't until I came off it that I realized that that was what was happening. And it was the pill that was causing all of these changes in sort of my mental health. I suffered with depression and anxiety and sort of almost like personality changes that happened whilst I was on the pill. And then I came off it, and then I met my now husband, and he was like, why don't you just go on the pill? And I was like, I quite like you. I'm absolutely not doing that. So I then found an alternative, and that alternative was the fertility awareness method. So I started using that myself in 2016, and I used that as natural contraception very successfully. I had no unwanted pregnancies. And then when we decided we wanted to conceive, we sort of flipped the rules and then conceived my daughter very intentionally. So it was very much my experiences that brought me here, but it's not my background. My background is actually in consulting, so strategy and communications consulting. So I've worked in that for 10 years in London, most recently in the civil service for the UK government. So worked a lot in sort of high pressure crisis environments, and my journey to becoming a mother and sort of living as a mother now has sort of spurred me to sort of pivot to do work that is more in line with who I am now and sort of what I want to be putting out in the world.
Thank you so much for sharing that. So many of us are put on the pill really young, either because we've had really heavy or painful periods, or because we've been kind of convinced by parents or doctors that that's just a normal thing to do. And I don't think it's until we come into this age of actually wanting to conceive or actually wanting to kind of become more in tune with our bodies that we realize how much we've sacrificed and lost by being on the pill from such a young age for so long. So I can relate to that. I was on the pill from 19 for nearly 10 years, and I didn't think anything of it. I didn't have any of the negative side effects, but I did feel like I was out of touch with what was actually happening with my body. I always felt like the chemical withdrawal bleed just didn't really make sense to me. And it just didn't feel in sync, right? And then when I wanted to conceive my daughter, I expected that, you know, oh, I've come off the pill, a couple of months later, I'm going to be pregnant. And it took a while for my body to reset, to readjust, to reestablish its natural rhythm. And I know now, since being in this field and doing this work, how many women struggle to actually come back into rhythm around their cycles. So can we talk a little bit about the dangers of the pill and why so many women and young girls are being put on it in the first place?
So I think there are quite a few important points. And I think the first one I'd start with is just to make it clear that I'm not anti-pill. What I'm against is anti-informed choice. So if you're not given the information you need to be able to make an informed choice, I don't think that is fair. If you're given the information that you need and you make that choice to go on the pill, I think that is a very empowered decision in itself as well. And I really respect that. What is really problematic is we're not given that information. So as you were saying, a lot of women come off the pill, but we've grown up with this narrative of fear around our bodies, fear around our fertility. So you're given the idea that if you so much as look at a boy, then you're likely to fall pregnant. You're sort of afraid that pregnancy could happen at any moment. Sex education in the UK was deplorable when I was at school, and I think it probably still is the case now. We're not given the full picture. And I think it's part of that narrative of putting the responsibility on the girl's shoulders or the woman's shoulders of managing her fertility, and the man has nothing to do with it. That's really challenging for a lot of women and girls. And what's really difficult as well is what we're not told is that when you go on the pill, it doesn't resolve any of the problems that you might have been put on it for. It actually works by stopping your menstrual cycle. So you're not ovulating, you're not releasing an egg each month, and therefore you're not getting all the benefits of ovulating regularly that your body needs. And so if you had any problems before, you've put a sticking plaster on them. And when you come off, those problems will still be there. They haven't been resolved.
Right.
So when you then start your trying to conceive journey, A, you have the sort of shock that you're not fertile all the time, as you were led to believe when you're young. The egg only lasts for 24 hours. And you're like, how am I meant to pinpoint 24 hours in order to get that egg fertilized? So you get that. And then you also, if you have any other menstrual cycle issues that were pre-existing, like endometriosis, PCOS, none of those have gone away. They've just been plastered over. So you then have to face all of that all over again. And even if you didn't have those problems, when you come off the pill, it does take a long time for your fertility to return. So for the majority of women, it can take sort of up to 6 months and beyond for their normal cycles to return. So if you're coming off the pill and you want to conceive quite quickly, that can be a lot emotionally. And that can make your trying to conceive journey really, really difficult as well.
And so I kind of held it like almost a detox from the continual chemicals, substances and hormonals that I was ingesting. You know, for me, it was a daily pill, right? And so I kind of thought, okay, maybe there's like this detox process that I need to go through to almost rid my body of a lot of those chemicals so that I can be in optimum condition before I conceive. What are your thoughts around detoxing from the pill?
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's something I really encourage women to do is to, if they can, give themselves time to come off the pill at least a good 6 months before they want to conceive, before they even want to start trying conceiving. And
right.
The main reason for that is the part of the way the pill works is it actually impacts our body's ability to absorb vitamins and minerals to the same capacity than we would off the pill. So often when you come off the pill, you'll find that you have deficiencies in a lot of the really key vitamin and minerals that are crucial to conception and healthy pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
So there's work that needs to be done to replenish those stores, as you were saying, sort of that detox, getting your body into sort of a fit state, because pregnancy is a marathon, right? It's a really sort of a stress on the body, as it were. So you need to make sure all your stores are where they need to be. And so it's a good idea to give yourself that time. You can, you know, work with your doctor, get blood tests to see where you need to be really focusing, and then use your diet and perhaps if supplements are right for you, supplements to get yourself back to that point. So there's the physical side of things. And I think there's also the more sort of emotional side of things as well of, I think it's really important to start that work of reconnecting to your body, because often we're sort of pretty disconnected from it, particularly if we're on the pill. We take the pill, we don't really think about it. We have the withdrawal bleed, which isn't a true period, but often we don't know that's not a true period, and then keep going. And it's a really crucial time in that sort of preconception time to be able to come back to your center, to be able to reconnect to your body, because if your goal is to conceive, you're going to be going on a journey of where your body is doing incredible things week by week to grow this human being. And having that connection to your body, that deep understanding, that deep knowledge and connection to that wisdom your body holds will serve you so well on that journey of pregnancy and into birth and into mothering and beyond.
I think this is why I find that first step of actually coming off of contraception is almost like a rites of passage in itself, because it's marking the beginning of stepping away from something artificial that's been intercepting that pathway between you and your womb and your cycle and your wisdom and your inner seasons, and actually taking that control back, like reclaiming that power and that wisdom and that knowledge that the body is constantly feeding us. And I felt like it was almost like opening the gateway to an inner voice that had been suppressed. And in my case, for 10 years, mm-hmm. right? It's like this deeper inner knowing that, you know, especially when we're doing things like womb therapy and womb yoga, we start to really deeply embody all of those changes and start to listen and attune to the micro changes that are happening on the physiological level, as well as the emotional and the spiritual level. And it's really hard to do that when there's been this buffer, there's been this interceptor. And so when women actually take that first step, I think sometimes we don't anticipate how much that can be a flooding of emotion and almost overwhelm, because we're being back in touch with something that perhaps we weren't in touch with from when we were really young girls. You know, girls are going onto the pill from 13, 14 years old. And so it kind of, it harks back to that menarche piece around how do we feel when we actually come onto our bleeds? How did we experience those bleeds? And gives us an opportunity to really heal that and to start to move through it. So even though we're speaking about fertility and contraception, what I feel is that there's a really big opportunity for this to be an awakening and a embracing of our deepest power that so many of us have been severed from.
Mm. Oh, that's really beautifully put, Nahanda. I really agree with that. I think it's what you were saying before about sort of that rite of passage. It's something I really work with my clients when I'm helping them make that step to come off the pill. It's sort of helping them understand what to expect, because for a lot of them, they'll be, you know, will acne come back? Will I get all sorts of things that I had before? And, you know, what to expect, the physical side. But we do a lot of the womb yoga side to work on particularly that emotional and spiritual side of things that we've been severed from. It's like we've been numbed to it. And exactly. I think it serves society for women to not have that connection to that power. So you step into it and you can, it can be quite overwhelming, as you're saying, with all of the emotions. And one of the biggest emotions I see with my clients is rage, absolute rage that they had all of this within them and that they've been severed from it and it's been kept from them. And there's so much wisdom in the menstrual cycle when you start to track it and you start to notice from cycle to cycle the patterns that occur. So, you know, noticing the insights that you might get when you're bleeding, noticing the voice that comes during your premenstrum that is that truth telling, helping you find more alignment in your day-to-day life. These are powerful, powerful tools that we've been kept from. And so for a lot of my clients, a lot of women, it can be a lot of rage and a lot of grief as well can come up from that. But it's a really beautiful opportunity to reclaim that, absolutely. And thinking about menarche, that first bleed, I think it's quite rare to come across someone who had a positive experience during that, where it was celebrated or they were given all the information they needed. For a lot of us, it's kind of like, oh, welcome. You know, you've got to deal with it once a month now. You know, this is woman's lot, as it were. You know, hide your tampon up your sleeve when you're going to the bathroom to change it. Don't tell anyone. You know, it's a shameful thing. And so we then hold a lot of that shame in our bodies. And coming off the pill and reclaiming that you know, your cycle and the wisdom that's within it is a bit like a second, you can live it like a second menarche, but you can live it in a way that you want to. So you can celebrate that. You can, you know, reclaim that power, reconnect to your body and actually benefit from the wisdom that's in there and start to move through those feelings of grief, move through those feelings of shame to get to a point where, okay, if you have a particularly difficult cycle with something like endometriosis, that can be a very painful process for you.
Yeah.
So it might not be that you get to the point where you're loving your cycle because it's associated with a lot of difficulty, but you might get to a point where you're able to sort of broker some sort of uneasy truce, as it were. You know, you sort of are able to live with the rhythms of your body and understand the wisdom that's there and what your body's trying to tell you and find ways to work with it.
And I'm conscious when we're describing this, it can sound like we are sugarcoating something that a lot of women find a real struggle. One, because of heavy bleeding or because of intense pain. A lot of women can be bedbound during their cycle. And so for them, the pill has been a real relief, you know, from not having to mm-hmm. deal with that on a monthly basis. So for women who have a sense of fear around coming coming back into alignment with their cycle and the pain and the kind of negative symptoms that they've associated with that, what hope is there?
I think that's a really, really important point. It's important to point out that it might not be for everyone. Women's health has been neglected in terms of research and science, and lots of women live with debilitating pain around their cycles. Like, it takes on average 8 to 10 years to get an endometriosis diagnosis for a lot of women. It's just completely ignored. Women's pain is completely ignored and minimized. So it's difficult. It's really difficult. And I really want to acknowledge how difficult it can be for women who suffer with their cycles. And what I would say to them is, take things at your own pace and make decisions that are right for you. So if the pill for you is an absolute godsend and it's a lifesaver and you want to keep doing it, keep taking it. Like, that is completely your choice. And it doesn't mean that you can't do all of the other practices whilst you're on the pill. It's not one or the other. So for example, you can still connect to your womb. You can still engage, you know, take part in womb yoga. You can still do those sorts of practices that help to foster a sense of connection to yourself and to your womb at a pace that suits you while you're still taking the pill. It doesn't have to be one or the other.
That's really helpful. Okay, so if we're going to get into the nitty-gritty of what fertility awareness method is and how it actually works and how women can begin to trust it, because I know for myself, there has been a lot of skepticism around the effectiveness of trusting, you know, the signs and the symptoms and knowing that that's safe enough to, one, either predict fertility or, two, ensure no pregnancy, right?
So let me start by saying what fertility awareness method is, and then we can sort of break it down into to conceive and then not to conceive. So the main thing about fertility awareness method is, it's actually quite, it's easier probably to say what it's not. So it's not the rhythm method, which is, you know, my grandma had 11 children. That's probably the method that she used of contraception, right? I don't know any woman today that wants to have 11 children and they're actually looking for reliable contraception. So fertility awareness method is not that. It is also not an app telling you when you're going to ovulate, telling you, because ovulation cannot be predicted. So an app that's telling you you're going to ovulate on this day, you're basically playing Russian roulette. Fertility awareness method is an umbrella term for lots of different scientifically based methods of understanding your fertility. And it's existed for quite a while. And each method will use a combination of things. So you might be tracking your cervical mucus to see changes in that to identify when you're fertile. You might be tracking your basal body temperature. And you might be using LH strips, the strips that you sort of pee on to look for an LH surge, the surge of the LH hormone. And you're using this combination of information to identify what we call the fertile window.
Okay.
And so the method I teach is called the symptothermal method. And that is where we track the cervical mucus and the temperature together. And we use both of those signs. And we, crucially, what we do is we interpret them ourselves. So we learn the rules of the method so that we know how to interpret these signs ourselves. So we have that power in our hands. We have that communication with our bodies on a day-to-day basis. So these are bodily signs that change throughout your cycle. They're influenced by the dance of hormones that happen every month. I don't know if you remember when you were at school, that graph of, you know, your menstrual cycle hormones with, like, this one does that, estrogen, progesterone, and so on and so forth.
Yes.
So as those levels change, you can see those signs in your body. So we use cervical mucus to open the fertile window. We track our basal body temperature to identify when we've ovulated. And then we cross-check the two to identify when the fertile window has closed and therefore when you're infertile for the rest of the cycle. So that's sort of the method in and of itself.
Okay. So before we go any further, what if you don't have regular cycles?
So I think it's even better for people with irregular cycles.
Okay.
Because you're looking at your signs every single day. So you take your temperature in the morning, and what we're looking for is a shift to be able to identify when you ovulate. So often we're told a normal cycle is 28 days and you ovulate on day 14. But this is complete nonsense. Around 12% of the population top percent of women have a 28-day cycle. By that science, that would mean the majority of women are abnormal, right? But wow, that's not actually the case. And ovulation doesn't always happen on day 14. So ovulation is a bit of a like a delicate beast, as it were, because it's affected by things that are happening in your life. So if you're under a lot of stress, what can happen is your ovulation then comes later. You might not ovulate till day 20. So what we're doing, and if you have irregular cycles, you might find that your ovulation changes as well. So for most women, ovulation will change from cycle to cycle. It won't always be the same day.
Sorry, Amanda, I have to interrupt because I have used a natural cycles app to measure my cycles. And I am within the 28-day range. And so I always assumed that I ovulate on day 14. And the app would tell me that's when it was happening. And my temperature would be taken every morning to input into that. So that's how I intentionally conceived my daughter. But I didn't realize that actually there was a potential that I could be ovulating at a completely different time. I know a lot of women who've been using cycle tracking apps to get pregnant or avoid pregnancy, and it hasn't gone to plan. And now what you're explaining really just identifies why that is such a problematic expectation to have. And the app doesn't tell you that. There's no disclaimer which says, hang on a second, you may not fall within this range. Like those statistics around how many women actually have a 28-day cycle. So my mind is already being blown by the ineffectiveness of things that we've been given as standards and expectations that we have going into something so important as planning or avoiding a pregnancy, and the amount of trust that we're giving over to these apps, thinking that we're doing exactly what we need to be doing to get it right. And there's still this gap between what our bodies are actually doing and what these things are telling us they should be doing.
Mm. Just on the app point, so I always caution against, particularly for people who are not wanting to conceive, and particularly people who have irregular cycles, from using apps like that, precisely because you're not getting the information that you need. They use an algorithm and they use popular sort of the data that they get collect from having, you know, tons and tons of users. And they have a very smart algorithm, but we're not robots. Our bodies are susceptible to changes in our lives, in our environment. And you can't predict that. The other thing that I have as a sort of my bugbear with these kinds of apps is that it's quite akin to the model of healthcare that we have had for a long time, where we rely on something external to help us manage, or feel like we're informed about our own bodies. People might use the pill and you're sort of reliant on that being available, reliant on your access to that, and reliant on that entity to be able to manage your fertility. There isn't that sort of autonomy. And then for women who then decide, actually, I want to come off that, I want something more natural, I'm going to use this app that's going to basically sort of do all the work for me. My bugbear with that is, again, it's taking away your power. And I don't know whether it's still the case, but when that app Natural Cycles first came out, they didn't include cervical mucus observations. I think you can probably input it now.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. But at the time, their reasoning, I think, or the reasoning was that cervical mucus observations are too difficult to learn and it's too subjective. So, you know, that's why we don't offer it. Or they didn't at the time. And again, it's that idea of sort of disempowerment of, your body's too complicated. Like you can't handle it. You need something else to do it for you and to give you the information.
Yeah, no, I completely get that. And we haven't even mentioned the way that data has been used as well, which I think has been a massive fallout for a lot of these apps, is that women are giving up their personal data, not necessarily knowing how that is being used and for what purposes. And so that's a whole separate conversation. But it really does then bring an attention back to, what do we want to do with this data? Like this, our bodily physiology, like how do we want to actually manage that? And who do we want to have awareness of all of our most intimate details about ourselves and our cycles?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the trust piece, I think, is massive. The responsibility piece is also a big one, because a lot of women have that head association of like, okay, well, other people might be able to trust their cycles, but I don't know if I can trust mine because of all of this irregularity. And so it's really refreshing to hear you say that actually that's a really beautiful opportunity to get really intimate with your cycle and to really learn what your body is telling you and to begin to lean into that trust. So you've got these three markers that we're measuring every single day. And you're saying that the crossover of that data will clearly indicate when you've ovulated.
So you can then use that information to confirm retrospectively that you've ovulated. And then we cross-check that information to then say, okay, ovulation has happened. You are no longer fertile. And the sort of the fertile window is about 6 days. And it's 6 days because in the right type of cervical mucus, fertile type cervical mucus, sperm can live for up to 5 days.
Yeah.
The egg itself is viable for 24 hours. And so putting those two together, we get a 6 day window in your cycle of when you could potentially get pregnant. So but the rules sort of add an extra buffer of a few days either side of that.
Okay.
Just to be a bit more conservative, to make it more reliable in terms of contraception. So the symptothermal method that I teach is actually up to 98.2% effective as contraception with typical use. So it is, once you've learned the method, it is effective. And that's another thing, is you can learn the method, and if it's financially viable for you, you can learn with an instructor. That's when you get those higher rates, or you can self-teach using books and so on and so forth. But once you've learned, it's a kind of method that accompanies you along your entire years of fertility, so right through to menopause.
So what happens if you are experiencing a period of illness, or you've got a temperature, or there's something that's going to set your data off for that month?
Yeah. So within the method, we learn rules for mitigating those sorts of life events, because life happens, right? And it depends on where that happens in your cycle, with how we interpret the data and how we then open and close the fertile window.
Okay. So what you described is how you would use it if you were going to be preventing pregnancy. So using it for contraception without any additional kind of necessary tools, you could just be measuring these three signifiers that your own body is producing on a daily basis at the same time, tracking that, and then being able to confirm once ovulation's happened, then the rest of that period in your cycle is going to be safe for you to engage in intimacy with your partner, right?
Absolutely. And you have a period of relative infertility at the beginning too, but you need to learn the rules of the method to identify when that period is. So of how and how long that is. There are certain rules and markers that we use within the method to identify that period of relative infertility at the beginning. Then you have your fertile window. Then you have definite infertility after your fertile window.
Okay, clear. So then if you want to use it to get pregnant, how can you predict when you're likely to ovulate?
Mm-hmm. So the beauty of it is you learn to track your cervical mucus, and cervical mucus is the number one sign, in my view, that you want to be tracking if you are trying to conceive, because it gives you a clue as to what is happening in terms of ovulation approaching. So we're tracking our cervical mucus, and you might find that, so the typical pattern that you'll might find is you have your period, then you have a period of dry where there isn't anything, and then you might get some like sticky, creamy cervical mucus. And then you get something that's very stretchy and very lubricant and very wet in feeling. And then it will come back to sort of dry or nothing again. And we're sort of looking for that sort of movement in the cervical mucus and finding your pattern to tell you when to have intimacy with your partner. And the point I made earlier about sperm being able to live up to 5 days in fertile cervical mucus is really crucial, because if you have intimacy at the right during that time of your fertile cervical mucus, even if the egg doesn't pop out for another 2-3 days, the sperm is in the right place at the right time to be able to fertilize the egg. So you don't have to pinpoint that 24 hours that the egg is viable for. And even within those 24 hours, it's only fertilizable for 12 hours within that. So you don't have to pinpoint that. What we're doing is, by using our cervical mucus, we're opening up the range of time that we've got to try and aim for pregnancy. So the benefits of that is that it improves accuracy. So the NHS guidance for intercourse for when you're trying to conceive is to have sex every 2 to 3 days.
Yeah.
Which for me is like absolutely madness because the fertile window is only about 6 days. It gets so intense. And if you're doing that month after month, it's such a vibe kill, right?
It's like... totally. I don't know how many women listening have been there, but if you're using an app or you're using something to measure your potential ovulation window and you send that text to hubby and it's like, okay, it's time. And it's like, okay. Depending on how long you've been on that journey, it can be really... pressure filled, anxiety laden, it can really become something that really counters the whole vibe that you need to be in that place of abundant overflow, pleasure and bliss and ecstasy, which is the ideal scenario that we're wanting to create a child from, right? There is that real pressure that couples I know who are trying to conceive can experience when you're really trying to pinpoint this time and trying to hit it as many times as possible within this window. So what you're explaining feels like it could actually be a lot less anxiety laden and could actually give some ease to the predictability of it and to the expectation around what's happening in the woman's body at that time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's, you know, it takes that pressure off. And it also means that once you've identified when your fertile window is, and once you've then identified, okay, my temperature has shifted, ovulation has happened, I can confirm that, you're then not trying to have sex in a part of your cycle where it is scientifically impossible to get pregnant and the emotional burden that comes with that, right? So you're not doing that. You've put that away. If you want to have sex, it's because you want to have fun with your partner, right? It's not.
It's a bonus.
We need to do dance right now kind of thing, even though it's not actually going to lead to a baby.
Yes.
So it's a huge relief, I think, for a lot of women. And the use of cervical mucus really gives you that window. And the thing that really breaks my heart is there was a study that was done in Australia quite a long time ago now, but it was a study of women going for IVF to have a baby. Mm-hmm. And 68% of them believed that they had timed intercourse within their fertile window when trying to conceive. But when they followed up, only 12%, just over 12% of them could accurately identify when this window was. So when you learn the method and you learn how to read the signs of your body, then you're able to actually accurately identify when that window is for you, not when an app might tell you that window is based on its algorithm. And it puts that power, again, we're talking about that power, back into your hands. And the other thing about using this method is it can, because you're charting your whole cycle, and once you've identified when you've ovulated, so we confirm ovulation retrospectively. So once you've seen your fertile cervical mucus, you've had intimacy, your temperature has shifted and you're like, okay, and then it stays high for the right number of days, you then know whether it's a viable cycle for pregnancy, because the other part of your cycle also needs to be a minimum sort of 10, 11 days. To give the egg enough time to come down and bed in the lining of the uterus.
Okay.
So by charting your cycle, you can see whether there are any other blockages that are happening for you in your cycle that might be preventing you from getting pregnant. So you might actually be timing it right, but there might be other things that are indicative of requiring further investigation with your GP or other specialists. And you can get all of that information from your chart. So you have this data, you have this knowledge, and if you then need to seek further assistance, you've got this data that you can then go to your doctor and say, this is what I'm seeing, this is what I think it is, can we run some tests?
That's so interesting, because I feel like when I've been supporting women through the conscious conception journey, there is almost this desire to not want to go in that much detail, because there's almost this association that, like, you know, if I start tracking and I start putting data into something and I start becoming really super aware about this window, it's going to feel even more pressure filled. It's going to feel even more anxious. It's going to be even more pressuring to my husband. And I just want to kind of see how it goes. And there's this sense of, like, if I don't know all of these things, then it won't be as serious. It won't be as, like, deep. And then it won't hurt as much if I don't get pregnant in that time. That they're not saying that, but that's what I'm hearing when they're describing mm-hmm. to me how they're going to move through this journey. And so as much as we talk about the benefit of kind of coming into alignment with all of these processes, I feel like a lot of women have a very real resistance to being that granular, right? Like to getting into mm-hmm. that much of detail, because it feels like it might set you up for more fallout if you then don't get pregnant, having put in all of that effort and all of that information and woken up at the same time every day to record your temperature and your cervical mucus and all of the things, and then you don't get pregnant. It feels like that would be almost more painful than if you just, let's see how it goes. We'll just try it for a few months and see. So what's your experience of women who are like, there's a resistance to actually making that effort and committing that level of intention to that journey?
So I think you hit the nail on the head there when you were talking about the fear. And the fear of, and fear of being hurt if things don't work out in the way that you hope. So the way I try and approach this with clients that I work with is to really help them dig down to their why. So like, why do you want this? You know, is it because of some sort of external society pressure that's telling you that you've reached a certain age and therefore you should start a family? Or is there something actually intrinsic that, you know, this is actually something that you really want? So I really encourage them to reconnect to their why and why they're doing this. And that's where a lot of the softer practices, so I teach the sort of science-based stuff, but I also incorporate a lot of the softer practices of womb yoga and connecting to your center and helping you connect to your root and the power that's there and the messages that lie within, to really help women come back to themselves, reconnect to themselves, because this is a decision that has to come from within.
Yeah.
And you have to sort of work through those blockers and find the right tools that will help you work through that. So one of the tools I offer is womb yoga. For others, that might look more like talking therapy. For others, it might be something else. So it's identifying those blockers, recognizing them, and seeking to, if it's right for you, reconnect to your why so that you can move through them.
And my thing is always, how intentional do you want to be? You know, you could be on the same journey of trying to conceive, you know, a year from now. But if you have access to information, tools, resources, things that are going to support you to be intentional, but potentially for a lot shorter a time to actually achieve the goal that you're moving towards, why not go in 2 feet first? You know, it's like people are like dipping a toe in, just wanting to like test the waters, and hopefully miraculously things are just going to align and happen. And it does happen like that for so many people. You know, there are women who accidentally got pregnant, and it's like, well, how are they like conceiving on accident? And I'm here on purpose with intention doing all of this work, and I'm still not seeing a result. So I hear some of the reservations that women have around how intentional you're wanting to be. But I think that invitation to do it in a way that also feels like a healing, it also feels like a softening, mm-hmm. it also feels like a reclamation and an awakening to all of these symptoms and signs that we perhaps have not been in touch with for a very long time. It feels like we're really taking on a new level of maturation, which for me is like mm-hmm. the first step on that maiden to mother pathway anyway. It's like, why not be the mother in the way that you're handling your reproductivity, so that you can actually be that source rather than deferring, because that sets an indicator for how you move through your pregnancy. It also sets the tone for how you go through your birth and your postpartum and your actual motherhood experience. So I feel like when we can come back to this kind of preconception time and bring as much intentionality and resource and support as possible in, it really sets such a strong foundation for women going through into conscious motherhood.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more, Nahanda. I think that's absolutely right.
My next question is really about, how do we speak to the men? This is assuming that women are in a heterosexual relationship, that they are in a partnership where they are conceiving biologically, physically with a man. How do we speak to the men in our lives about what we're doing and why it's important and why we've chosen this way, both for to conceive and potentially for contraception as well?
Mm. So I'll start with the contraception, because oftentimes what I see is that resistance from their partner of being able to trust it. And I think what I find really helpful And it was also the case in my own personal experience was to present the rational. My partner really needed to know sort of, okay, what is the science that's behind this? How can we trust this when we were looking to use it for contraception? So being really clear and sharing that information, but also sharing the sort of more holistic side of things, I found that actually quite powerful. So when you're using fertility awareness as your method of contraception, you are inviting your partner into fertility as a joint responsibility. It's not just for you as a woman to go and sort out and make sure you don't fall pregnant when you don't want to have a baby. This is actually a joint thing because it requires two people to be responsible for this. So I found in inviting my husband to, for example, I would take my temperature and he'd read it in the morning and then I'd put it into the app I was using. So I use an app called Read Your Body, which is basically like a blank paper chart. It doesn't have any predictive tools or anything like that. It's really fantastic. And then I'd input it into that and having conversations around, okay, you know, where are you in your cycle? Are you fertile? Are you not? Makes it a joint responsibility. And I think that brings another level of communication within a couple. I found it really powerful in terms of increasing that connection that you've got around your fertility. And when it comes to conceiving, I found that it made it a very intentional decision because mm-hmm. it was both of us saying, okay, well, we know this is the fertile window. We're now both deciding this is the time for us to start our family. And going into that with that conscious decision, I found it really powerful. And I feel like it also brought a new dimension of connection within our couple as well. I found that personally really, really beautiful in the way that I think it brought us together.
And I can see that it can actually give men a lot more insights into what their partners would actually be navigating emotionally and spiritually throughout the months. Because if your partner has a really intimate awareness of your premenstrual signs and ways of being, then it means that they're hooked in a level that if you're not sharing those kinds of insights on a daily basis, they're a little bit further removed from. You know, I'll tell my husband I'm on my period, which he associates with, okay, I might need to take up a little bit more of the slack and you might want to rest a little bit more. But there is no talk of that at any other point during the cycle. So the fact that I might be, you know, super sensitive at a particular time, or I might still be quite feeling very energized. And so therefore, I really want to talk and I really want to connect. It's like having those insights about how your cycle affects you personally on a emotional, psychological, spiritual level, and then your partner starting to learn those as well brings a much deeper opportunity for real intimacy and an honoring and a respect of what's actually happening on all of these levels for you. That's a real opportunity for deepening for couples. I was also thinking that on the trust piece, I remember when I was using the app and I was saying to my husband, you know, we're in the green zone now, you know, like it's safe. He'd be like, show me the data. Like, where's the app? Like, what does this mean? And so I think if you are able to do this as a couple, it sounds like there is a real opportunity, not only for you to deepen into trust for yourself, but for your partner to deepen into trust of you and of the process and of the fact that you're both taking this shared responsibility and the onus isn't just on the woman to, you know, one, get it right, but two, be responsible for all of the data and all of the things because it's her signs and it's her body. Yeah. So that's a really helpful reframe. And I really appreciate that as it being a joint journey for the couple.
Mm. It's really an education for you. You're getting to know your body, but it's also an education for your partner because they don't know anything about sort of the cycle and how that affects you. We are cyclical beings, but we don't live in a world that respects that cyclical nature. So we live in a society, particularly here in the UK, in the West, of expecting people to perform at the same level every single day, to deliver, to show up, and be the same person every single day. But as a cyclical being, you know, we're reflections of nature. You know, right now it's winter. There are no leaves on the trees. The flowers have not bloomed, you know. There's a time for everything in nature. And just like that, within our cycles, there are times where we're more productive. There are times where we need more time alone. There are times where we need more rest. And us being able to be conscious of that and to communicate our needs to our partners is really empowering, both for ourselves and also getting into the habit of being able to speak our needs. Particularly as mothers, we have a tendency to put ourselves last, right? Our needs kind of come at the bottom of the pile. But what I love about this sort of cyclical practice is you get to practice each cycle of that idea of speaking your needs and what you really need and being able to meet that and speaking with others in your life to help them support you in meeting that. And it's a practice we get to do each and every cycle. We're talking about the cycle, but it spills out into other parts of our lives as well. Being able to speak our needs, being able to meet our needs and being able to show up in a way that is respectful of ourselves.
Mm.
I think it spills into every aspect of our life. And it's sort of the example I want to set for my daughter of being able to sort of do that for herself and respect her body and respect what she needs as well. And being able to communicate how she's feeling and what she needs and to see that as something of value. Yeah, I think it's really powerful.
I feel like when I was thinking about the benefits of fertility awareness as a method and when in your life you're going to be most likely to want to engage with it or to kind of do the work, you know, that we've been talking about to actually show up for it. We've identified these two key times in terms of, you know, actually trying to bring in a child and a pregnancy or to avoid pregnancy. But also I was thinking, even when you're breastfeeding, you know, that I had a very heightened awareness of the fact that I didn't want to be ingesting any substances, you know, chemicals, anything whilst I was breastfeeding. And, you know, they say, you know, of course it's safe and you can still breastfeed whilst you're on the contraceptive pill, or you can have the coil, or you can have the injection. But it felt intuitively like for me, it was a conflict and I didn't want that to come into my breast milk. So for women to even think about that period of time having just had a baby where you definitely want to give yourself and your body time to heal before you're going to conceive another, if that's your plan, but also where you're wanting to, if you're breastfeeding, to keep that milk, you know, unaffected by any other hormones, this seems like a really useful and valuable resource to be able to have. And so mm-hmm. for periods of time when you are breastfeeding, can you use a fertility awareness method?
Yeah, you can. So I said at the beginning, there was sort of fertility awareness is a bit of an umbrella term for lots of different types of methods. And there are some methods that are more suited for different types of cycles and more suited for different types of parts of your life. So within the method I teach, there are, if you're sort of exclusively breastfeeding, you can use it as contraception, but there are sort of strict criteria you need to meet. For example, you can't be pumping or anything like that for us to be able to get a clear reading on your cycle. But there mm-hmm. are other methods you can use, like the Billings ovulation method is a different method where you don't take your temperature, you're only tracking cervical mucus, and you can use that as an effective method of contraception while you're breastfeeding and in that postpartum period. And that is actually probably, for that postpartum period, the type of fertility awareness method practice that I recommend in particular.
Fascinating. And so my other question is around the intersection of race with this conversation. I do feel like there is an extra burden that Black women and women of color in this country face around not only the pervasiveness of some of the reproductive issues that you mentioned at the beginning in terms of PCOS, endometriosis, fibroids, but also a more of a distrust around the NHS as being, you know, a service that is actually going to be beneficial for us and to be able to actually hear our needs and support us in the nuance that we're bringing. But also that the statistics around Black women seeking IVF is so much lower than their white counterparts, but they actually experience infertility at higher rates. Can we speak about how this can actually be a really beneficial practice for women of color and Black women?
Definitely. As you were saying, we exist in a system that unfortunately doesn't cater for us. I was pregnant when the Embrace report came out that saying that Black women were 5 times more likely to die in childbirth and postnatally than their white counterparts. And for me, that was a wake-up call of, right, I actually need to educate myself so that I can advocate for myself, because unfortunately this system is not set up to cater and look out for people like me. And I think these practices are really beneficial in terms of helping women understand their bodies, understand themselves, so that they can advocate for themselves. So what we were talking before about that practice of being able to put your needs, you know, higher up than the, they might not come first because it takes a lot of practice, but higher up than at the bottom of the pile, that practice of doing that will spill over into other ways. These reproductive issues hit Black women more than their white counterparts. So if you are experiencing that, being able to then advocate for yourself and seek the help that you might need and that you might want. And it's sort of a practice of helping us to value ourselves in a system that doesn't value us. And I think this supports us to be sort of better mothers to ourselves, to our children, and to set that example. By doing these practices, you develop a certain level of compassion for yourself. When you start to be like, okay, I need to rest, so I'm going to give myself rest. You start to develop a level of compassion and a restored sense of self. So we sort of start to redefine our relationships, both to ourselves and to those around us. And I think we have to start with ourselves before we can expect the system to start to look after us. So if we can empower ourselves with the knowledge, the language, and the sort of trust of ourselves, then we're able to advocate in a world that is just not there to look after us, not there to look out for us.
I feel that it's a real gift. And so at this point of the conversation, I tend to ask this question to all the guests, which is, what has been the biggest lesson that motherhood has taught you personally so far?
Through becoming a mother, I've learned to mother myself. So it's made me really conscious about the sort of self-talk I have to myself. That, you know, that voice in your head that tells you that, you know, you need to do more, or you shouldn't rest, or, you know, you're not good enough. And it's made me really conscious of that and made me really think about the example I want to set for my daughter and, you know, think about, okay, well, you wouldn't talk to your daughter with that voice, so why would you talk to yourself with that voice? And learning to meet myself with more compassion, particularly in the times where, you know, I get it wrong and I don't mother in the way that I might like to because I'm tired or because, you know, I'm ill or there are all sorts of other things going on.
Life.
And just being able to... Yeah, exactly. Being able to meet myself with compassion, I think that has been the biggest lesson I've learned in motherhood.
And so for women who are listening, who are intrigued and who are thinking, okay, maybe this is something that I could use either to, you know, aid me in my conception journey or to prevent pregnancy as a contraception method, how can they connect with you and your work?
Yeah. So if they head to my website, which is fertilityrising.com, and sign up to my newsletter there, then they can keep up to date with all the things that are happening. They can also find me on Instagram at fertility_rising. So I'm running a few womb yoga workshops, and I always say that that's sort of the best place to start if you're interested in any of this. It's quite a nice embodied way to start to reconnect the mind with the body and listen into the wisdom of the body as well.
And you were also really generous in giving a free tool that I'm going to link to in the show notes that women can actually download and begin to start to map these initial kind of seasons. Can you just speak a little bit to that and how women can use it?
Yeah, absolutely. So that is the practice of menstrual cycle awareness, which is slightly different from fertility awareness in that it's not a method of contraception. And it's not a method for conceiving. But what it is, it's a method of cultivating awareness. And I think awareness is at the heart of everything that we've been speaking about today. And so you can download that, and inside they'll find a like a wheel. You can use that at the end of each day, note down one word that sort of summarizes how you felt that day, and you note it down on the chart, with day one being the first day of your period, and then you go through the rest of your cycle. And you'll find, and this is a really great practice of listening in to how your cycle affects how you feel on a day-to-day basis, who you are and how you show up, and being able to move with more ease as you start to do that cycle after cycle. You start to notice patterns, you know, around day 23, I start to get a bit of a wobble about, you know, my whole life, what am I doing my life kind of thing. But if you know that happens on day 23, you're able to give yourself a bit more compassion on that day and know that that's coming up. And you might know that, you know, and other points that you get super tired or you want to spend more time on your own around certain days. And once you start to have that, to do that, and you start to see those patterns, you're then able just to move with more ease in your life. And I find that cultivating that awareness is a really great first step to then perhaps going down the fertility awareness method route, where it requires a bit more of an investment because there is a learning curve to that. But it's a really nice, gentle introduction.
And you mentioned that there were some books that people can use to kind of self-educate as well when they're on that journey. Were there any others that came to mind for you?
So there's one in particular that's actually quite a good starting point. It's called Period Power by Maisie Hill. That's a really great introduction to your menstrual cycle and this practice of menstrual cycle awareness, of noting how you feel every day and tuning into how the different parts of your cycle have an impact on your day-to-day life. If you're interested in learning the fertility awareness method, so you know you're looking for a method of natural contraception or you're looking to conceive and you want to self-teach, there is a massive, like a book that is like super, super thick. It's called Taking Charge of Your Fertility. You can get it often on sort of secondhand. It's quite an old book. You can get it secondhand. So that's quite a good resource for self-teaching. And as I said, if you are able to invest financially, the app Read Your Body has a directory of teachers that teach various methods of fertility awareness, so you can sort of find the method that's right for you. I personally teach the symptothermal, which is the cervical mucus, and the basal body temperature. So if you're interested in learning that, get in touch and we can definitely have a chat about whether that's right for you.
Brilliant. I feel like you took us back to school today, but it's so necessary. It's like it's been a whole education, because even when we are practicing the things that we think are awareness or are kind of like deepening into our ovulation cycles, there are so many ways which you've described so beautifully that we can miss the mark and we can still be off track with something that is so integral to our health, to our wellness, to the choices that we're making around our families and as women and as mothers. So to really have this laid out in the way that you've done today, I think is going to be a real gift for women. So thank you so much, Amanda. It's been such a pleasure. Last gift that you would give to women listening, for mothers anywhere, what would that gift be?
It would be to rest. That has been the biggest game changer for me. I've been practicing since I've become a mum a lot of yoga nidra. And I know you've spoken about that on your podcast previously. So giving yourself permission to rest, to take the rest when you need it, would be sort of my number one gift.
Beautiful. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to that conversation with Amanda. How did that land for you? I know for me, there were so many aha moments, both of times in the past where I have been intentional and moving through a conscious conception journey of my own and really thinking that I was doing all of the things, you know, using the Natural Cycles app or whichever tracking app that you use, having the ovulation sticks, timing things in a way that felt like they were the right way. I really felt like I was doing all of these things, but I never took into account cervical mucus. I never took into account how and when that actually happens for me. And if there were any fluctuations in my cycles, if things like stress or alcohol or sickness were impacting the data that I was inputting into the app. And I'd never taken it on as a joint responsibility between me and my husband. And then on the other side of that, now having, you know, feeling like my family's complete, wanting to be in a space of conscious contraception, having that discussion around the trust of the apps and the data, around the changes in my own body, around being able to actually trust the things that are happening for me on a personal level and being able to communicate that confidently to my partner so that we can feel safe that we don't need any extra hormonal chemical contraceptions, which for me is a really important thing because I don't really want to be tampering with my sovereign body and my sacred temple. I don't want to really be relying on something that I have to take every single day. So that's no judgment to any women who choose to do that. There just feels like there is an opportunity here to really take on some of these learnings and to start to lean in to the wisdom and the awareness and the resource that our bodies are constantly giving us with our cycle, with our ovulation and our menstruation. It's like these are real opportunities as women to embody the subtle, nuanced shifts that are happening on a month-by-month basis. So I took so much from this conversation, and I actually said to Amanda after the call, you know what? I actually, for one, need a session with you so that I can really feel 100% secure in understanding all of the rules of the processes of what to measure when. And so I can report back and let you know how that actually goes. But for me, it just left me wanting to know more. So all of the links to everything that she mentioned should be in the show notes. And I would love to hear what came up for you, you know, how it might change how you're navigating your fertility journey or your contraception journey. So yeah, follow me at Soul Mama Journey on Instagram and let me know in the DMs what comes up for you, what questions you might still have, and let's start this process of reclaiming our power and our wisdom as women and as mothers. Thank you so much for listening. Tune in again next week and we'll speak then. Thank you so much for listening to the Soul Mama podcast. You can head over to soulmamajourney.com for more resources and ways that I can support you on your journey. I'm most active on Instagram, so you can follow me at Soul Mama Coach. Also, get in touch with me via email at nahanda@soulmamajourney.com. I read and respond to every single message. It takes me ages, but I really love hearing from you. Please take a moment to rate it wherever you've listened. And if you feel like you've got some value from this, please share it with another mother. I appreciate you. Thank you.